Welcome to episode 354 of Radio Free Nintendo. I am once again your host, Jonathan Metz. Good to be back in the chair, and along for the ride, as always, are James Jones.
The rain has ended.
Guillaume Bayette.
Enjoying the lesser Thanksgiving this weekend.
Oh yeah, happy Canadian Thanksgiving, dude.
Don't mention it, it's nothing.
And Mr. John Lindemann.
Expats
thank
don't
you,
get to
you,
enjoy holidays, John. Traitor.
For John,
hey,
Thanksgiving's,
you know,
so nice, he gets to have it twice.
I get to drink twice in a two-month span.
Wow. All right, so that's the end of this show.
Yeah, it's very good to be back, guys. And, you know, things are starting to settle down a little bit. We're kind of getting back into a normal routine here. And we are going to have some very good listener mail coming up in the second half of the show, and we'll probably mix it up a little bit next week, now that we're back in our groove. And I mean, we're in the midst of fall gaming, so maybe it's not as dramatic for us Nintendo fans, but there's still, you know, something called Pokemon coming out, and we got a Mario game coming soon, and there's some stuff going on still, even for us. So we will do something with that probably next week, but for this week, we're going to keep it a little bit simpler, and we will kick it off with new business. And Guillaume's got a game that I think you've talked about a little bit before, but presumably because the game itself has been updated, you have something updated to say about it.
Right, no, actually, I've never, like, this was the first time that I've played Spin the Bottle, Bumpy's Party. We talked about it because of a listener mail, the same listener who wrote us again.
That's what it was.
Like, he wrote us twice, I think.
He basically shamed us. You didn't buy the game!
Yeah, I think he's a shill, you know, like a plant.
Oh, he's totally.
He is
totally,
Bumpy,
yeah.
In fact.
Huh, that explains a lot.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's his party.
Get out.
Shill if he wants
just
to.
Get out.
Slow clap.
So yeah, Spin the Bottle for the Wii U is a party game, but with a twist. Haha. No, it's a... I'm sorry. And I'm not the one editing this week, so this is going to stay in. Terrible. So yeah, Spin the Bottle. Like it's a party game, and kind of like Juan Sebastian Joust, they're kind of trying to make a game that is not totally focused on the TV and is more like people actually interacting with each other, like touching. Yeah. Getting real close.
Touching each other. Much
touching
like in the
other.
Real Spin the Bottle. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, you don't get to kiss anyone in this, but sometimes, I don't know, it's almost, so sometimes it's a little bit too close for comfort. So I played this with a couple of friends. So there were four of us. There was my girlfriend and a friend and his girlfriend. And I was lucky at the beginning. I spun the bottle and it ended up on my girlfriend. And we played this mini game called, Circus Act. And what you have to do is basically hold the Wii remote with both hands in the back of your partner. So really, you're hugging them, and they do the same to you. And there is a drum roll, and when the drum roll ends, you're supposed to jump at the same time. So, yeah, it was very...
And that's how Guillaume's girlfriend broke her ankle. Good job, Guillaume.
Well, I was thinking, you know, like, if you end up playing this game with small children, like, what happens? They just, like, hug your leg, and then they're sent flying into furniture. I, you know... I can see this becoming very dangerous, but fortunately...
How does this translate into a video game, though? Are you holding Wii remotes and it's detecting the acceleration upward to see how close they are to the same...
It's a motion toy.
Yeah, basically. Like, you're holding the Wii remote in their back, so you are both holding a Wii remote each. And
okay.
I guess it's detecting if both Wii remotes move at the same time.
That's clever. I mean, honestly, that's a clever use of the Wii Remote's motion capabilities that I don't think I've ever seen before.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, and like many of the games, like it's all about kind of embarrassing you, or, you know, like getting you to be uncomfortable. There are bonus objectives that you can do. Like, they're totally optional, but the game can ask you to look intensively, not intensely, look intensively at each other's eyes. These guys are not native English speakers, but yeah, you get the idea. So while you're jumping, you know, together, hugging each other, you just look intensely in each other's eyes. There's another game where you were both holding on to the same Wiimote, and the game was called The Drill, and you had to spin to make the Wii remote spin. You know, like we were running in circles around it basically to drill into the earth, basically. And there's none of the action is actually on the TV. All the instructions are on the gamepad, and you spin the bottle on the gamepad, and basically, like, you press each, like, a button on the Wii remote to start the mini game, and a timer starts, and, you know, like, you have to complete the activity before the timer stops. Like, it's very, very basic. If you do turn on the TV, all you get is this weird picture of really strange and all strangely phallic creatures just, like, sailing or something and making gurgling sounds.
That's the bump and bumpy's part.
Yeah, basically.
Bump and grind.
Not all the games have you touching other people, which is, you know, it's nice to get a break.
There's a soundbite for
that.
You.
there are games where you have to, like, the people who are not playing have to hide Wii remotes somewhere, and, you know, while the other people... not... Hide them in the room, John.
Not internally, John.
Hide them in the room, somewhere in the room.
Hide the Wii remote internally.
It's Guillaume full of grace.
Anyway, while the team is, you know, in another room and not looking, and then they come in the room and they have to find the Wii remotes based on, like, the sounds that they're making. Yeah, there are lots of little cute activities like that. And you can go in the settings and turn off certain activities. If you're like, wow, I'm never doing that again, well, you can actually go and tell the game that, and it's never...
I feel like the game should just decide, oh, you don't want to play that? Guess what you're playing exclusively!
And, yeah, whenever people succeed at, like, 3 or 4 or 5 games, you can determine that as well. So, yeah, let's say, like, you win 5 games, then your team wins, and that's the end of the game. It was pretty fun, but I gotta say, like, the first night that we played this, like, we played a set of 3 games, or, like, yeah, like, 3 victories, let's say, and I was, at the end, we're just like, I don't think we're drunk enough for this. And much later in the weekend, when everyone was, you know, had let go of their inhibitions, it was much easier to play this game. So, yeah, I don't know, like, I don't know if I should recommend this game or not. Like, it was kind of fun, but at the same time, it was kind of, wow, I would never play this with, like, you guys. You know,
yeah,
like,
What do you mean?
You have to really know the people.
We're very close friends.
Yeah, but would you waltz with me? Would you slow dance while looking at me intensively?
I feel like if you
want
to play
this
game with people, you have to tell them if you're on a register.
Probably.
Yeah. So it sounds like you should buy this game when you're drunk.
Yeah.
Play it when you're drunk, mm-hmm. and then maybe get so drunk that you forget you ever played it.
Yeah.
I think that's actually
it's like a one-night stand of a game, right? It's like basically just have that game do the walk of shame the next morning.
It's much like Enjoy Your Massage.
It's like, wait, why is...
True.
Well, I mean, the trick, obviously, is after you hide the Wii remotes, you have to go through airport security, so...
yeah, so what else is there to say about it? I just, like, it really depends...
Nothing!
Yeah,
there's nothing else to say!
I guess it really depends on the kinds of parties that you guys want to host in your homes.
What kind of
Don't throw this on us!
No, actually, I have some legitimate questions about
this.
So,
all right.
One, do you feel like there's a good variety of different kinds of activities to do?
Well, some of the, you know, like, the end results can be really always the same. You know, like, when you're slow dancing with someone, you're really against them, and you have to move to the sound of the music, or when you're jumping and you're holding someone and you're jumping to the sound of the drum. Like, it's always, you know, the same kind of... It kind of always comes back to the same thing. So yeah, like, and I guess we kind of stopped playing before we had exhausted all the mini games. Eventually, we just moved on to WarioWare and to Smash Brothers. So yeah,
Both very good drunk choices. But I mean, did your group enjoy it, or is this something that they would want to play again?
I don't know. I think it really depends.
Are they avoiding eye contact?
It seems like important information since you can't really play it by yourself, right?
Yeah, it's like, they stopped calling you.
No one, you know, like, it's not like they left in a hurry after that, you know, and I don't think...
Well, no, you have to sober up first.
and no one has started to shun me yet, so...
They're screening your calls? That's probably a bad sign.
Yeah.
It's hard to leave when they've been slipped a Mickey.
But yeah, like, I think...
Jesus, John!
When they've been slipped a Bumpy, you mean.
But yeah, I think it's really, like, if you want to play this with people that you really know, or perhaps, like, with... You know, with children, this could be a really good game. Like, they'll love, you know, searching for the Wiimote, and depending on where you hit it.
Adore the innuendo.
Or if you have the kind of parties where everyone just, all the guys drop their keys in a bowl, and then the ladies pick a set.
Whoa, wait, what?
I think it's called a House of Cards party. There's a good video hit song about that. So this game seems totally crazy, and
it is.
I have a feeling that as much as it seems like a very specific experience, you know, and you might have to have just the right group of people and just the right state of mind in order to enjoy it. I bet you've sold a few copies. I bet James is going to buy it just for the weird novelty factor of it. And
no, he'll buy it to send it to me.
Yeah, and not all the games are.
I can't gift Wii U games, John.
You wish you could, buddy. I know.
Oh.
Yeah, and not all the games are embarrassing. Some have you like saw a log with two remotes. You have to time your movements together, you know. But you're basically just making a saw motion. Or there's another one where it's kind of the same idea, but you're. It's a like a railroad trolley.
Yeah.
So you're just like pumping the thing, it's insane. It's wacky. It's spin the bottle, Bumpy's party.
Oh, okay. So still available on the eShop. It's still pretty cheap right now, I think.
Yeah, it was $9, I think.
Okay, yeah, but they are, as we discussed earlier, they have this kind of weird progressive pricing scheme where as they continue to add DLC to it, they are going to increase the price. So if you buy it now, you get it for whatever the current price is, and then you get all the future DLC for free. It's a little bit like getting a free season pass, I guess, at launch, you know, in the sense that it is nice that they're going to keep supporting it, but you don't really know how much or for how long they're going to support it, and you don't really know what the quality of the future upcoming content will be. So,
there's only one more DLC pack, and it's called the Sexual Harassment Edition. Great.
No, it sounds intriguing, and it's definitely unique among the Wii U library. So I'm fully supportive.
Amongst
of that.
Everything.
Yeah. Well, yeah. All right. Well, I'll go next, and I got to play a little bit of Wind Waker HD, which I'll talk about in a minute. But first, I thought I would mention just the process for getting my Wii U games back, because I did over the weekend go and buy a system. I bought the Wind Waker bundle because I actually still have Nintendo Land. It's on, I mean, you know, that was a disc, so I still have that. I didn't lose that, so I don't need another copy of that. So I got the Wind Waker bundle. Don't really care for the kind of artwork on the gamepad, but I also don't care about it, so whatever.
That's how I felt too. I was just kind of like, whatever. It's some okay looking runes.
It's not offensively bad or anything, but I don't think it looks really all that great either. But I kind of don't care. So, other than that, the system is exactly what you would expect. It's just a deluxe Wii U, and the Wind Waker is actually a download code. Maybe this was common knowledge, but I was actually a little bit surprised about that. Not that it really makes a difference to me. I think it's smart for Nintendo because it just lowers their costs. So it kind of helps them justify including a game even at the lower price.
and not installing it on the drive right away. A, let's, well, obviously because they've tied to the account, but B, it forces you to go to their eShop. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's smart, you know, and it doesn't bother me because I probably, you know, if I ever bought that game, otherwise I would have bought it digitally. So, I'm perfectly fine having a digital copy of it. But you know, I got it home and of course right away I couldn't really do that much with the system. I did connect it to Wi-Fi and download the system update, and I tried the new Wii mode where they show the game on the gamepad and you can actually use the gamepad sensor bar, but you still have to use a Wii remote.
Mm-hmm.
So that's weird. I've heard a lot of people shitting on that. I mean it's clearly like a half step in the right direction. I think especially for stuff like virtual console games that are clearly not going to use the pointer or the motion control, they probably should, you know, be working on some kind of backdoor code to let you just use the gamepad, joysticks, and buttons for that. And maybe that will come in the future. I mean, maybe this is really just, hey, this is the part we've got working right now. We'll make it better in the future. I think this is a very limited usefulness to most people the way it is right now, because you do have to have a separate controller. But, you know, I mean, if you're the kind of person who really depends on off-TV play, this might let you play some Wii games in off-TV mode now, especially things like, I'm thinking like New Super Mario Brothers, Wii, you know, would be really good for the, or, you know, even like Donkey Kong Country Returns, Kirby's Epic Yarn, like stuff that doesn't use the pointer. And
that's already had sequels on Wii U.
So, well, stuff that you don't need a nunchuck, you don't need a classic controller. All you need is a remote. So it's easy to take that with you along with a gamepad. It's easy to set up the gamepad up on a table or on your desk or in your lap or wherever you want to go play it away from the TV. And then you have just the small controller that you're kind of holding sideways. I think that's a reasonable kind of game to play in that setup, you know, and for some virtual console games that might work too, but you have to remember that a lot of virtual console games do require a classic controller, especially now right. On Wii U, you can't even use a GameCube controller like you used to. So you have to have a classic controller to play all those N64 games, most of the Super Nintendo games, the Genesis games those work with a remote only. But anyway, a lot of games.
How?
What?
Wouldn't you be short a button?
No, they use B.
Yeah.
Oh!
As terrible as that is, they
it's not good, but also remember a lot of Genesis games, at least one of the buttons was unused or redundant.
Yeah,
and
I
like
know,
in the case of Sonic, all three of the buttons did the same thing, so just pick your favorite. So
that's
it's
vile.
Not a big deal for a lot of Genesis games, actually. But, you know, regardless, I think it's an interesting addition. I hope that they're not ending there, because I think they're on the right path. You know, they've probably cleared the most difficult part of getting Wii Mode to work on the gamepad. And so if they go just one step further, you could really get a lot of mileage out of it. It becomes a very useful feature for a lot of people. So I think it's a good thing. I'm not complaining about it whatsoever, because you couldn't do it at all before. But I just kind of fiddled around with it. I played a little bit of Rhythm Heaven with it. But you know, I couldn't download any of my games, including Wind Waker, yet, because my Nintendo Network ID was still linked to the old console that's broken. So I called Nintendo. I said, hey, I lost my Wii U in the flood, and I bought a new one, and I want to get my games transferred. I want to get my account, you know, my Miiverse, all that stuff. I want to get it all transferred over. And they said, okay, let me take down some information. I have to forward it up to a different department. There's like a kind of a supervisor or administration group that's more, they have greater access than the normal people and customer support. And so they basically fill up a file with a bunch of information about you and your system, and they take down the serial number of the new system that you have and everything. And then they say, we'll call you back, or we will email you in a day or two, and we'll get that taken care of. And I was like, oh, cool. You know, they didn't ask for documentation. They didn't want a police report or anything like that. So it took a couple of days, but about 2 days later, I got a call at work, and I couldn't pick it up at the time, so I just let it go to voicemail, but they also sent an email. So when I got home that day, I called them, and they just asked me a couple questions. They asked me to verify my account by telling me some of the games that I had previously downloaded on the Wii U eShop, which was, you know, easy for me to do. And I actually had already pulled up my Club Nintendo list, so I could look at that and just read them off of there too. And, you know, they set it all up. And they said, you know, you should be getting an email in a few minutes. And then once you get that, it'll give you the instructions. You basically turn on your Wii U, you go create a new me, or and you link your Nintendo Network ID and you just type in the one that you had on the other system. Because basically all they have to do is go in their server and unlink that ID from the old console. So you're not allowed to do that yourself, but Nintendo can. So that's all they had to do, because that system will never be turned on again. It's not possible. So there's no way for me to go and do it anyway. But all they had to do was unlink it and, you know, like deauthorize the old console. And now that Nintendo Network ID is kind of open. So it still exists. It still has all my games attached to it. Even all my Wii games, like all my Virtual Console and WiiWare stuff. All that stuff is also linked to it. And the Club Nintendo Association as well, because that's linked up to it. So all that stuff, my Miiverse history and all my previous posts and my friends list, all that stuff is attached to your Nintendo Network ID. And once that is free and it's no longer linked to a system, I can go in on the new system and just link it. It's built right into the menus. It's very quick and easy. I put in the password that I had before, and now it's set up on the system. And now I can go to the eShop and even into the Wii Shop channel through the Wii Mode and download all the stuff that I had previously purchased. I can go into Miiverse and all my stuff is still there. And it was really easy. You know, it took a couple of days. I mean, the process clearly could be streamlined. And I talked to the kind of higher level guy who called me back and did the final step of it. You know, and he was asking for feedback. And I said, well, you know, I think this is great that you guys can do this. I mean, obviously, this is why I continue to buy games digitally, because I know that this is possible. And clearly, you've made it a lot easier since the days of the Wii. And even on 3DS, it's more difficult than this, because Nintendo Network ID is not on your 3DS yet. But that's coming at the end of the year. And I have a feeling once they do that, they're going to kind of go the final step and really catch up with PlayStation, Xbox, Steam, etc. in terms of giving you the autonomy to move your account to whatever system you want to. Right now, that's not something that they built into it, but it definitely sounds like they are working on it. They've even kind of made some comments in public about, hey, we know that you guys want this. We think that it's possible. It's not easy, but it is possible, and we're working on it. And my guess is that by this time next year, if not a lot sooner, maybe even by E3 or even before that, I think they will have it set up so that basically you can just buy a new system and do the transfer yourself without having to call Nintendo customer support, without having to wait a couple days for them to get to your ticket.
Sure, because they want you to buy a new system.
Absolutely. And in fact, I was kind of surprised by this, but when I called, you know, in my case, you know, I had a natural disaster. That's my justification for requesting a transfer. Right. Or, you know, I would presume the other, you know, legitimate purposes are, well, you know, my system was stolen or it was damaged or, you know, whatever. Or I sold it and I want to make sure that my games aren't on the old system and that I can move them onto my new system. To me, these are all legitimate reasons to request a transfer. But the customer support people told me, actually, we're really kind of backlogged right now because the new Zelda system is out and a lot of collectors purchased it and wanted to move their games over to the new system. So that is possible now. You don't have to because you don't need a police report or any kind of bullshit like that. They'll just do it. You know, because they do have an account system now, they can deauthorize a console for you, which means that there's no risk for them to allow you to link it to a new system.
Right. Unlike the 3DS, which they really can't deauthorize.
Right. So for 3DS, you know, whoever stole my old 3DS or whoever found it, I've said before, I don't know if it was stolen or if I lost it. I just reached in my pocket and it wasn't there anymore. So I don't know where it went. I don't know what happened to it. But if anyone ever ended up with that thing, they still have all the games that I had purchased up to that point. There's no way for Nintendo to turn that off. I mean, I'd be happy to let them do it if they could, but they don't have a way to do that built into the system. But
and send them a swap note going, fuck you.
But with Wii U now, they do. So, it's great. You know, it's not perfect. It's not quite where I would like it to be. But man, they have improved that whole process so much, and I was very, very pleased with it. And you know, as always, Nintendo's customer support people are so good. They're very nice. They're very knowledgeable. They're very patient. They're very thorough. They take down your phone number, and if you lose a connection, like I did, they will call you back. They're really, really, really good at it. And now they actually have the processes catching up to the level, to the quality of customer service that they already have. So, that's why I will continue to purchase games digitally. including Wind Waker HD, which I played for 15 minutes last night, because all this got resolved really only a couple days before recording. So I haven't had much time to play all my games, even though I have been downloading them again. But I wanted to just try out Wind Waker HD just out of curiosity. I've heard so many good things about it. People seem really, really happy with it. And, you know, I will say I think it looks better than it did at E3. There's still a couple of things in the textures that I wish were even better, especially stuff on the ground. But Wind Waker is not really a game in which you obsess over the pixel-to-pixel details or the, like, really, really specific texture maps. It's more about the overall aesthetic of
it. It's the whimsy.
Well, it's the colors that they use. It's the fact that everything's always moving because the wind is omnipresent, and so everything billows in the wind, including like Link's clothes and his hair and the birds and the grass even kind of bobs up and down as the wind blows through it. And all that stuff is so distracting, and I mean that in a good way, that things like this kind of, you know, ground path texture that they have here in the first island is not really all that sharp. It kind of doesn't matter. And my complaints at E3 were as much about the fact that I think they really botched the presentation of the GameCube version that they had up for comparison. I've talked about that before, how they had it, you know, I actually inspected the back of the TV and they had it going through HDMI, which is very suspicious because GameCube doesn't support HDMI, which means that they had it going through some kind of box and getting it upscaled and doing God knows what to it. So they weren't even showing it on a TV that can natively support GameCube output. And, I think that's a problem when you're trying to do a side-by-side visual comparison. So I felt that it was, you know, sort of disingenuous to put the game next to the Wii U version like they did at the time. But that was my main complaint. I mean, I thought the Wii U version looked fine at the show. It didn't really pop out at me. And I think it is popping a little bit more in the final version. So I'm happy about that. I mean, again, this is not something I would pay $50 for, but in this case, I didn't have to. It came with the system, and I needed the system anyway. You know,
yeah, same I feel the same way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so, it's not something that I would have bought on its own.
As a bonus, I'm excited to play through it again.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, and for me, it's actually, even just playing like the first 10 or 15 minutes, of course, they are pretty story heavy, but I was reminded of the fact that I'm not that familiar with the story and the writing and the terminology of Wind Waker because I originally played this game in Japanese. So I remember a lot about the game, but I don't know the names of the characters, you know, and I don't even understand the plot. Like, my girlfriend was watching me play it, and she's like, why does, she was asking me about some of the characters, and I'm like, actually, I don't know. Because I've never read this part in English, so I don't know why this character is doing that. They kind of pantomime, and I sort of get the gist of it, but I don't know the details about why the characters are doing what they're doing or even the relationships among them. I remember when I first played the game, I didn't know that the boat was the king.
Yep, King of Red Lines, yes.
Yeah, because, you know, he doesn't look like a king.
Right.
He's just a talking boat, so as far as I knew, he was just the boat.
It's weirdly story heavy game, like,
yeah. Oh yeah, it definitely is.
There's a lot of backstory for these characters and there's lots of like reveals. The game's like, oh, look at that. Where if you didn't know what they're saying, they could be super duper confusing.
Well, it all, you know, talking with her about it and sort of reminiscing on my experience playing through Wind Waker in Japanese 10 years ago. Actually, more than 10 years ago is December 2002 when I got the import copy. It made me realize that Wind Waker really was, I think that was the first game I ever played in Japanese, like all the way through. And it really was such an ideal choice because I feel like Wind Waker, because of the things they did with the expressions of the characters, the way that everything is animated, the details and like the characters' eyes and the way that they emote, I think a lot of that stuff had never really been done in games before. I mean, you see that heartbreaking scene where the grandmother is like shaking and she's crying. And you see all these expressions on their faces, you can really understand the story, even if you can't read the words. So it's perfect to play with children who aren't very good readers yet, perfect to play with people who don't read English at all for whatever reason. And it's really the perfect game to play in a language that you don't understand because you can still understand 95% of what's going on without actually reading the text, and it's because of the graphic style and the animation style and the way that the game is presented. And you couldn't say that for Ocarina of Time. You know, you couldn't even say it for Twilight Princess or Skyward Sword. So I think the game deserves a lot of credit for that, and it's something that I had never really given it credit for. I never really realized how important that was until last night.
You'd never escape the owl if you couldn't read it. I just want to stop talking to you!
That's probably true. All right, so John, why don't you go next for new business?
All right, well, I finally took a look at Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate on Wii U. I got everything set up, and I can now swap save files between my 3DS and Wii U at will.
By the way, if you're interested in this game, it's super-duper on sale on Capcom's website right now.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Both this and New Super Mario Brothers, pretty much they just dropped in price. There was some crazy sale on New Super Mario Brothers U as well that I saw, and I was like, oh, that's
nice. Yeah, and they basically flooded the market with copies of it.
Yeah,
well, I wouldn't expect that to stick around, because come Christmas time, I have to imagine Nintendo's hoping to sell a lot of copies of that to people who are just now getting the system.
Yeah.
At full price.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I have no regrets, obviously. I'm very happy.
I have no purchases. Shame.
Yeah. But, yeah, it was interesting for me because, I mean, I've played the heck out of this game on 3DS, so I'm very used to the way it's presented on 3DS, the way the game plays, because, you know, it's very fast-paced, and so, you know, usually, you know, when you're running away from a monster that's absolutely going apeshit on you, you know, you usually have to make some pretty quick moves, especially in terms of managing what you have in your inventory, you know, using potions and using, you know, stuff like that. Like, if you get poisoned, you have to get an antidote. You have to do all that kind of in real time and, you know, while you're running around and avoiding the monster attack.
You gotta keep trotting.
Whatnot. So, you gotta keep trotting, man. If you learn one thing from this podcast,
high stepping away from danger.
Keep trotting. Yeah, you gotta high step Deion Sanders style. So it was very interesting for me to kind of really sit down and play it. And I actually played through an entire quest, and I got to fight the Rathian, which is a huge flying dragon, which is pretty impressive. Now, I will say on Wii U, I mean, one of the things that people have kind of criticized this for is it doesn't look as good on Wii U as you know it could, right? Because it's really just upscaled from the
Wii
version.
It's a port.
Yeah.
You know, the environments probably aren't as detailed as they could be, but I don't really see that as a problem because, you know, I've played it on 3DS, and that's all I ever really wanted from it was just a better looking version of that. I wasn't really looking for some kind of visual tour de force. And I mean, the environments are really pretty, and it's really cool being able to kind of sit back and kind of pan all the way around, and you just have a wider, a wider scope that you can see of any environment. And also another big thing too, that you don't get on the 3DS is the kind of ambient sounds. You know, you hear kind of birds in the background and stuff. And, you know, when you go by, you know, a waterfall, you kind of get that bass rumbling of the water hitting the ground kind of thing. And there's just like little touches like that that you really don't get from playing it on a 3DS.
But
so
John,
it feels like I'm...
I understand why you're comparing it to the 3DS version, because obviously mm-hmm. they're compatible and everything, but you played a lot of this game on Wii.
Yeah, but
so
I didn't...
how would you compare it to that version?
It definitely looks sharper. Mm-hmm. I haven't played that version for a long time, but I mean, it's definitely... I think it's... I mean, it's definitely better than that version, I think. I mean, it's obviously very similar. But I don't know. It just feels better than the Wii version. I think it part of that is the fact that it kind of, the whole engine is just faster, you know, the camera moves faster, and it feels smoother overall. I think the experience is a lot smoother.
Have you messed around with the UI stuff? Like how you can sort of clear off the TV screen by moving a lot of stuff down to the gamepad?
I haven't done too much of that. See, I'm not really big on the 3DS. I don't use any of the panel stuff. I don't really play around with that very much. Like any of the touchscreen stuff, I don't assign anything to it. I don't even use it at all. Mm-hmm. I'm strictly old school PSP style, you know, switching inventory stuff. You know, I don't do any of that. Like, kind of, I don't do any of that. Like, you know, kind of shortcut, you know, quick touch panel stuff.
But my impression on the Wii U version is that it's not necessarily for like touch access. It's just visually, like there's all that overlay stuff, all that information that they present on the TV. And if you want to kind of just clear off the TV and just make it more pretty, you know, more immersive, you can just move a lot of that information down to the gamepad screen. It's not to say you have to start using your thumbs to like tap on the screen to do things.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't played too much with that. I know there's two types of game. I did go in, and I know there's two types for the gamepad. And one of them you can show, I think you can show the screen directly on the gamepad. And then one of them you can kind of choose to have the kind of like that UI stuff on the gamepad. But I haven't really messed around with it just because, like, that's the thing. I'm playing it on a 24-inch monitor. So I feel like I already have like a lot of real estate on my screen. You know, especially compared to, I mean, bear in mind, I'm coming from the 3DS where everything is just kind of crammed right in, right? So, I mean, I'm looking at this thing like, wow, I have so much room. It's weird, like, that I can actually kind of see details on the icons of things, you know? Because, I mean, there's so many icons that you have in your bag and all that kind of stuff. And it's just weird. For a while there, I was just like, wow, I can actually see all the details on these icons. It was kind of a weird experience. But yeah, I mean, I'm enjoying it so far. Probably the only complaint I have is that playing with the Pro Controller, kind of the same sort of complaints that I had last time with sort of the weird placement of the face buttons. That kind of comes into play sometimes where when you'll I found myself accidentally, you know, thinking that I was going to, you know, hit Y when actually I hit X. And so instead of swapping to something or bringing up the inventory selection menu, I would actually, you know, while I'm on the run, of course, running away from monster's attack, I would accidentally swing my sword. Well, of course, when you swing your sword, that freezes you in place. So I would get hit. So there's some kind of like little things like that. And
that's a learning curve, though, don't you think? Like even when the 360 controller first came out and they had X in the place where we're used to having Y, you know, and they had the placements switched around and, you know, weird things like that. I feel like it's something. Any kind of placement like that with a controller, it's not necessarily that it's bad. It's just different. And so it takes time to get used to it. And eventually you get to where you can jump from one controller to the next and you don't really think about it.
Yeah. I mean, once I got used to it, I was off and running. And also, you know, in terms of selecting stuff, usually on the 3DS, I think I always use Y to do that. And that brings up the little kind of, you know, scrolling thing where you can scroll through your inventory. But on Wii U, I figured out that Y is a little bit cumbersome to you. That's a little bit too far away to kind of hit it quickly when you're on the run. So, but you can use the top left, the left trigger. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you figure these things out on
the fly.
That's
a trigger that you don't have on 3DS.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, you have the left button, but, you know, it's not as convenient because of the way you hold the 3DS. It's not as convenient to use it. Like it is when, like, because I'm using the Pro Controller, so it's extremely convenient to use. So overall,
Do you think you'll end up playing a bunch of online with the Wii U version? I mean, you've got the improved friends list, you got the built-in voice chat right into the gamepad.
Yep, I think I will, because it's a lot easier to just, you know, hop into rooms. You know, I've kind of been trying to, you know, feel out the single player right now, but the thing is, I'm getting kind of into the, like, I'm playing Monster Hunter a lot more now. I'm playing it regularly. I used to take big breaks from it and just kind of come back. But now it's like, you know, I've kind of caught the bug and I'm like, well, I need to go back and I need to farm this guy to get this, to make this armor. And I want to get this armor set. So it just sucks you in at that point. It's, you know, you're already fished in. It's just a matter of fact, it's just seeing how quickly you get reeled in.
You heard it here first, folks. So. John's infected.
Yes, I am. So yeah, it's good. I really like it. I feel like, you know, swapping your save files is a bit cumbersome, but I don't mind it. It's convenient enough. You know, I wish that they had some sort of, you know, cloud thing where you could just, you know, pull your save file down instantly wherever you started up the game. But, you know, maybe in the future they'll have that. But it's good for the time being. I like the fact that Capcom always seems to go out of their way with Monster Hunter to just do kind of goofy things to make you, to like let you play it any way you want.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good.
Awesome. All right. So James, why don't you pull us around the final turn of new business?
Final turn. So I have gotten around to what I said I'd get to last week, which is Ni No Kuni. About 5-ish hours in. I'm trying to figure if I should just be incendiary or if I should, try to be kind about this, but up until this point right now, it's not very good. it's attractive, certainly, but it is tremendously ponderous to the point where it feels kind of it feels kind of primitive. To give a good example, the first, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes of the game, you're just basically walking from waypoint to waypoint so you can watch a video. There's basically no player agency because the town you're in is basically just a really long path that it turns, but it doesn't really fork. And there's a big dumb indicator telling you where you need to go anyway. So it's mostly just walking from story scene to story scene. Until you eventually get into this other world, which is where the majority of the game takes place. And even then, so it's a big open world sort of, there's a lot of little things that kind of cleanly map to sort of like a Tales game. So like the big open world you run from place to place in, you know, the enemies on map you can try to avoid, but it's basically you go to the first town and then you go from place to place as indicated by little buttons on the map again and do fetch quests for, I don't know, another hour, and then you get a really, really easy dungeon. I was kind of surprised by how easy and very, very linear these dungeons are.
Is that the one with the rat at the end or the tree?
That's so the first one is the tree, and then it's the one with the rat. So you go to town for a while, then you have to go to the dungeon that has the tree. Then you go back to town and get the dungeon that has the rat. Both of which are incredibly easy.
So here's the good news, James. This game does not stay easy. And you're actually getting pretty close, I think, to the part where it starts to ramp up quite a bit. But you're also getting the part where you start to get more options in battle. And that will continue. And actually, once you get the second character in your party, that makes a really big difference in how much fun the battles are and how many options you have.
So I have three.
And then it turns into Pokemon.
So I have three familiar at this point.
Yeah.
It evolves.
You know, I've got three familiars, but I really only find the first one that you get. What his name is.
Yeah, Mighty Mighty.
Yeah,
I understand, but again, that will change very quickly.
All right, right now the other two just seem useless.
Ni No Kuni is a weird game in that it makes an incredible first impression and a terrible second impression.
Oh, it's abysmal how slow it's been so far.
Yeah, but I promise you that the pacing is all over the place. But I promise you that the game becomes far more engaging, far more challenging, just more interesting. Very, very soon. And actually, I would say that the pacing improves dramatically over time as you have more agency over where you go in the world and what you do.
Also that the battles get done quicker or what?
Like, yeah, the battles do speed up over time.
Right now, I go into a battle, it's over in a couple seconds, and then I go through the loading screens and the dancing and the stat leveling, and then
why are you dancing every time you finish a battle?
I don't know, but
do you usually do that in
they
RPGs?
They do. Some old Final Fantasy.
The
original Final Fantasy. All the guys raised their fists actually, up in the air.
Yeah, picturing James dancing in his living room. But anyway,
the battles have been especially kind of obnoxious because the enemies respawn so quickly. It's just like, oh, look, another enemy's back. Yay. So, like, at the same time, though, the first three dungeons would probably be about 10 minutes each if it wasn't completely chock full of enemies. So I know why they do it. It's just kind of like, oh, God. So I've gotten to the part where you have to cross the desert, and the game stops you cold so Drippy can tell you, oh, by the way, the monsters here, yeah, they're really fucking strong. And then you get in your first battle, and you're like, wait, what the hell just happened? Why do these guys jump up like six levels all of a sudden? Like the first battle I had in the desert was harder than the boss I'd just beaten. Considerably harder. There's sort of this like weird, but I see what you're saying, there's a weird pacing thing going on because I feel like they were playtesting the game and like the playtester's like, dude, what the hell happens when you leave the forest? And like, oh, we'll just put an animation of Drippy telling you it's really hard now. It's fine, don't worry about it. And like that was the end of the conversation. They're like, no, don't worry about it, we're good. I will say that I really hope the battles get better, because right now I'm just avoiding them just because they're dull. And it's just, they just take up time. And, like, I want them to be better. I don't find the combat system is super engaging, but I can see that it has potential to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've barely scratched the surface of the combat system. There's a lot more to it than what you've seen
so
far.
I do feel like the boss battle, at least so far, they're these big open areas and you can run around. And that effectively mitigates a lot of the threat of the boss, especially because Drippy's snotting out health ups the entire battle. So the boss battles feel weirdly nerfed. Like, they were really hard at one point, and then they just toned them way too far down. I don't know.
Maybe they did for the first couple.
I don't know. It's weird. There's,
it gets way harder later. But just keep in mind, this game is made by the people who did Professor Layton, so it is.
Hey, those get started right away. Your ass needs to solve the puzzle to get over the bridge.
Oh, no. I'm just saying it's a very high-quality game, and if you get to a point where you're like, wow, this really just isn't very good, there is much more than you're seeing, and I hope you'll stick with it, because that game blossoms into something very different than you think it is at the beginning. Mm.
It's
If you don't build a machine gun out of a slot machine, I'm just not interested.
Hey, I tell you, there is actually some really bizarre story stuff that comes in quite late into the game. Like, it's not up to, like, Xenoblade levels of crazy.
Oh, well, nothing is.
But,
I mean, that's...
But it goes to some places that you definitely would never expect, considering how childish it is in the very beginning.
I mean, yeah, Xenoblade crosses the Rubicon and then sets it on fire. Which was very perplexing for the Roman society, that their river's on fire. it's... I hope you're right, because it's very pleasing to look at. Its pacing issues are just killing me.
And the pacing is the worst in the beginning, and it gets better.
That's good, because the only way it could get worse is if maybe do another mandatory install. Stop, we got to install again, guys.
I don't think the pacing's ever great. I think it suffers from a lot of the pacing issues that a lot of Dragon Quest and Pokemon games have. Mm. You know, sometimes the story will disappear for 10 hours. And then it'll come back, and there's a lot of it, you know?
Yeah, so...
There's a lot of weird stuff like that. So it does have slow spots, but then it has spots where it seems like you're doing, like, 10 new things back to back to back to back for 2 hours. You're like, oh my god, you could have spread that out a little bit more.
Yeah, my favorite observation I've had with the game at the point was Drippy's just rambling on about things in this menu. And then he just stops halfway and goes, there's a lot of stuff in there, don't worry about it, you'll figure it out. And I'm like, that is such a situation where the playtester just said, you're just giving me too much. And they just said, well, fuck it, we'll just say he's giving you too much and be done with it. It's like, it just screams to me, the devs like, hey, we don't have time to fix that. Let's just put a message up there and just completely concede the point.
Maybe that was a joke from the localization.
I don't know.
Because the localization is spectacular.
It's been pretty good. With the exception of Oliver's voice. Which is some serious Luke syndrome going on here.
Again,
it is level five.
It's a coming of age story for him, so I think he becomes less irritating over the course of the game.
Yeah,
as he becomes a little more mature.
It's not just his delivery is not very good either.
Yeah,
it's amusing. It's because Drippy's is actually really good, and then like he'll have these long conversations with Oliver, and you're like, oh, just stop talking. Please stop. I will say the hand animated sequences. I mean, the whole game itself really captures the Studio Ghibli vibe in ways I didn't expect it to. Like, I'm trying to remember what the name of the first town was. It's a really weird name.
Motorville? Or you mean Ding Dong Dell?
Yeah, Ding Dong Dell. Yeah. And I've gotten a little bit tired of being sent around to get new clothes from waypoint to waypoint. So I'm just putzing around outside the castle, and I find myself kind of just wandering the edge of the map, and there's this little stream in town that ultimately goes to a lake that becomes a minor story conceit later, and on the side of it, somebody's like sketched little fishes along the side of the river in the direction of the current, and it's a little art thing that you would expect to see in visiting a cat village in a Ghibli film. They would draw fishes everywhere, especially where there are fishes. But in a regular game, you probably wouldn't run into that. Like, you wouldn't see that in a Tails game, which is the closest analog I have here. Like, they wouldn't fucking bother. But here, there's just little things, and like, one of the people in town has drawn his face on a wall. It's like, well, that was probably not a very smart decision, but I can see why he did it. It's little things that are hidden in corners that you may not see, but the attention to detail was really good. So when they do the animated sequences, the fully animated hand sequences, they're really impressive. Like, way higher quality than I expected them to be. Which makes you wish they did more of them and less of the in-game stuff. But, you know, it's the places where they really splurge is really, really impressive. And I feel kind of bad because it makes the places where they cut back seem cheaper, even though they're not. It's like, oh man, they kind of spoil you with it. So that's the only thing keeping me going right now is just the visual presentation, and you know, the music is really spot on for the studio.
Oh yeah,
I think it's the same.
The production values are. It's a very legitimate thing to keep you motivated to play through the slower parts of the game. I felt exactly the same way. And I was very glad that it did pull me in that strongly, because the gameplay does pay off as well later on.
Actually, now I think about it, the music must be composed by the same guy. It's got to be.
Oh, yeah. It's Joe Hisashi. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yep. Yeah, because, I mean, it's a dead ringer. The only thing that's upsetting is the top world music. Is so good, but I never get to hear beyond the first five stanzas because I always get attacked with some fucking monster.
Like, that's horrible.
Damn it!
When will developers learn not to reset the music when there's random battles?
Oh, I've never heard the refrain because I keep getting attacked by like a blue inflatable balloon that spits poison.
Well, again, James, that will change over time.
That's good.
In fact, the way that the enemies on the overworld react to you will change as your level changes. So as you get stronger, if you stay in the same area, the enemies will start to avoid you or run away.
Yeah, that's
from you
that's
a times.
That's another little Tails trick they've picked up. There were a few things in here. I'm like, I'm playing a Tails game right now.
You'll also get some abilities that will help you avoid enemies.
That will be great.
and then you'll get all these other characters that you want to level up, and you'll actually start trying to find enemies sometimes, or you'll go out on bounty hunts. So there's a lot.
I don't
want to
fight anymore.
It's a pretty big, complex game.
I don't
want to
fight any more squirrels.
All right, guys. Well, I think that's going to wrap up our new business this week. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we've got your listener mail. Please stick around.
Or don't. I don't care.
I do.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
First up, we have a review, Dungeons & Dragons, Chronicles of Mystara, a review by Andy Gergen. Andy finally declares victory in his long-running struggle with Capcom to finally get this game released on the Wii U.
You did it, Andy.
If you have a yearning for taking a visit back to the 90s, let Andy tell you whether or not Mystara is worth your hard-earned dollars. If you're curious about the competitive Smash Brothers scene, Neil has the interview for you. Jonathan Lugo from Apex sits down and tells us all about their tournament being held in New Jersey in January 2014. Check it out if you're a fan of the fighting game scene.
An enemy of fun.
Alright, next up in this very busy week, we have impressions for Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze by Aaron Kaluska. He gets some hands-on time with the recently delayed platformer and lets us know that all is well. Check out his impressions to find out what it's like to use Dixie Kong, don't take that out of context, and why he isn't lamenting the removal of the blowing mechanic. Again, context. We also have a feature called Disney Infinity Good Idea, Bad Idea by Becky Halata and Kimberly Keller. Becky and Kimberly share their musings on the viability of adding the Disney fairies and Ratatouille to the toy box of Disney Infinity. One is considered a good idea and one is considered a bad idea. However, much like Alien vs. Predator, whoever wins, we all lose.
We have a review of Rune Factory 4 by Kimberly Keller. Kim explains why the Rune Factory series has escaped the shadow of Harvest Moon and become a great series in its own right. Check out her review to find out what's to like, and here's a hint, it's a lot. If you're curious about the series, this is a must read. And we have a blog, Just Dancing the Night Away by Justin Baker. No, this blog isn't about Greg Leahy's weekend habits. Instead, Justin tells us why he may just join the dark side and partake in the madness that is Just Dance 2014 on Wii U. He also complains about how this year's entry is nothing more than a roster update.
We have impressions from Mario Party Island Tour by Aaron Kaluska, Justin Berbet, and Neil Monahan. We get group impressions from a trio that wanted to visit the island, Mario Island. Sure, there's no online play, but what you can do is imagine Neil trying to imitate Princess Peach. Oh, right. That's also an event in the game, coincidentally.
That's on 3DS, too, by the way. I didn't know
that. It's Super 3DS. Lastly, we have a feature, the origins of Skylanders Swap Force. It wouldn't be a normal week of at Nintendo World Report without Skylanders report from our own personal Swap Force member, Neil Ronahan. This time, he continues his coverage of the recent visit to Vicarious Visions, explaining how the Swap Force idea came to fruition. It's a great behind-the-scenes look at the development of a breakout series. And lastly this week, again, double down on the lastly, we have the latest issue of Nintendo World Report Powered Off. I believe this is issue 10.
Yeah.
I wrote something that's actually personal, heartfelt, and serious this time. And then I also edited an email from a longtime, quote, listener, Sarah Miller, who writes about her dream games involving John Lindemann.
Oh, dear. Oh, man.
You should definitely read that while wearing protective clothing.
Yeah, I was just telling the guys that I need to read that in order to have a story concocted for the police when they obviously come by my house.
So that content is exclusive to the PDF magazine, right?
It is. All of that content is exclusive to the PDF magazine. There's also additional content from the site and there's some really good exclusives in there beyond my stuff, but really that's what you're there for. Excuse me, my stuff and Sarah's stuff. Definitely not both mine.
Do that and check out the mountain of other content we just talked about over at NintendoWorldReport.com. Welcome back to the show, everyone. It is time for listener mail. And as always, the email address is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. We will repeat it later, so find a pen and paper. Guillaume is going to read the first email from this week.
Delaney writes, back when I was an only child and I played my N64 all day after elementary school, I obviously played Mario 64. I hate that game. I played Ocarina of Time till it didn't work anymore, and Banjo-Kazooie was another of my favorite ever franchises. I just couldn't stand Mario 64. Now fast forward to when Galaxy came out. I was a year late to the Wii and obviously got Galaxy, and hated it once again. I beat it and immediately got rid of it. Same with Galaxy 2. So when I got my 3DS end of last year and picked up 3D Land, I don't know why I don't learn my lesson, but I hated that one too. But semi because it took me less than 8 hours to beat, and that was nearly 100%. I think, though, I know why I dislike these games so much. It's lazily made. Revisiting levels over and over, especially in Mario 64, is so lazy. Sure, it was a little different, but it was boring to go in the same environment every time. Sure, Galaxy has amazing visuals, but when the visuals are constantly reused, is it that impressive? Heck, I was actually annoyed at the end of Galaxy because of the final battle with Bowser. It was the same battle I had done before and it took no effort. So my question is, after all that, after all these games getting quite positive reviews, and the Galaxy games especially, is my taste bad? Or are we overlooking some of these points about these highly regarded games?
Ooh.
That's the thing, I don't think he has bad taste, but I just question why he keeps replaying games that he doesn't like, in genres he doesn't like.
Yeah, we all have games we don't like. And
play anyway.
Yeah, sometimes.
You know, I congratulate this person for being persistent, and clearly, you know, I think he's probably looking for something to like in these games, and maybe that's why he keeps going back and he keeps trying them, and it just can't believe that these games aren't working for you. But there's always going to be those games that maybe you know are good, and you know that most people love them, but for whatever reason, they just never, ever click with you. And I think that's okay. It doesn't mean you have bad taste.
Yeah, I mean, your taste is your own, right? I mean...
Yeah. As far as laziness goes, though, do we agree with that? I mean, Mario 64 was kind of invented the 3D platformer, to according to some people.
It invented the good 3D platformer.
Yeah, yeah, there were a couple of them before, but they were lazily made, one could say. Yeah, the whole idea of having these big, or big for the time, levels and going back to them over and over again is because they took a lot of effort to make. Like they took a lot of time, and they were making it up as they went along, right?
Well, the other thing the other miss here is storage space on an N64 cart.
Sure.
Yeah, but I don't think that really even has much to do with it, and I don't think it's because they just took so much effort to make these levels. I think it's because in Mario 64, for the first time, the levels are three-dimensional, and there's so many different ways to get to any given point in the map. And so, you know, you compare this to even going back to the previous game, like Yoshi's Island. There's still, even though those levels are big and they scroll a lot, there's still a beginning point and an end point. And the goal is generally just to get from one to the other. And they said that can't really be the only kind of goal in the game when it's 3D. So they gave you these missions that you do. They gave you these objectives. Or sometimes they just said, go find a secret thing. Here's a clue. You know, somewhere over the rainbow. That's my favorite mission in that whole game, because they don't come out and tell you exactly what you need to do. They let you figure it out.
Yeah.
And when you do, it's awesome. So, you know, I think in the case of Mario 64, they wanted you to go back to these levels multiple times to make sure that you actually went and found all the different
right.
sections of them. Because the first time that you play through the level, you're going to pick a path, and there's so much more to the level that you haven't seen if that's the only part that you do. So they want to force you to go back and explore these levels and actually kind of get the full amount of the content out of the game.
Now, with Super Mario 3D World, I can kind of see his point, because after about maybe level like 6, things start to get recycled a bit. It just becomes kind of rehashes of the types of approaches.
You literally play the whole game twice. It's just remixed the second time.
I'll buy that. I mean, that's the thing. Like, at a certain point in that game, they definitely stop introducing new gameplay mechanics, and it's kind of like, okay, all right, I'm doing A, B, C, D, and E, and in this one, I'm just doing A, you know, C, D, and E. And it's just the same thing over and over again. So that kind of petered out near the end. But
And that game, I mean, we know that game was made in an unusually short amount of time.
Right.
Right.
So that would explain it in that case, definitely. Whereas I think Mario 64 is probably in development for like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't chalk it up there. And I think both of the Galaxy games also had plenty of time. So in those cases, I mean, I guess in the Galaxy games, I don't really feel like you do go back to the same levels all that much. I mean, there are usually 2 or 3 stars in a given level, but you don't have to go get all those stars, or certainly not right away. So
there's more than 2 or 3, but yeah.
Well, in Galaxy 2, a lot of times there are only 2 or 3, though.
Yeah, and that one's, yeah, because you get all the weird comet stars and stuff, yeah.
Right, but I think Galaxy 2, the overall number of levels is a lot higher.
Yeah, probably.
They put less stars in each level to get to the same total. But the boss thing is very legitimate. And I think we've talked about that before on the podcast, maybe a long time ago. But, you know, I think it's a big problem. I mean, it's not good even in Mario 64. But what's really unfortunate is that formula was copied for the later games that were made by completely different people. And, I think in Galaxy 1 and in Galaxy 2 as well, I mean, I think the repeating bosses is really kind of, it's a terrible thing, and I think it's a really serious criticism of that game. Still love both of those games to death, but that is my least favorite part of it, and it's something I've complained about with every single game EAD Tokyo has made going back to Jungle Beat. They repeat bosses, and partly it's because I think they get a couple of ideas to design bosses, but they don't have enough to fill up the whole game.
What we talked about when Galaxy 2 came out was how it alternated between Bowser boss and Bowser Jr. boss, and how the Bowser Jr. bosses were actually like fun little platforming things.
Mm-hmm.
And those were actually legitimately fun each time because they tested your skills in a Mario game, i.e. platforming. Whereas the Bowser ones were just droll drudgery, where you just redid the same thing over and over again. This time he just spit more fireballs or whatever.
Right.
Which is upsetting, because it means they could design boss levels, they've just chosen not to.
To be fair, if you go back to the first Super Mario Brothers,
oh yeah,
you fight the same boss 8 times, and he's not that different each time.
Oh.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I mean, I don't think that you can really, you know, hold up the 3D games to that same sort of paradigm. you know, because that was more of an arcade experience.
This isn't primitive game design 101 either.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember, what are the boss battles like in Mario 3?
Well, they're all the Koopa kids.
They're more distinct. So, I mean, there is some distinctness.
In Mario 2, there's, you know, a lot of different bosses.
No, Mario 2's fucking weird.
They repeat a couple of them. I think there's two versions of Birdo and there's two versions of the Snake. But there are several different bosses in that game, so it's already...
Right. Again, Mario 2 is super weird, though, so...
Yeah. And, I mean, it's based on an entirely different game.
Right. It's not a Mario game.
Yeah, it's really not from that team, but...
It is from that team.
It is from that team, just not a Mario game. But yeah, it would be the bosses thing. It would be nice if more of them, if there were more Bowser Juniors and less Bowsers. Yes,
I think it comes down to the fact, and I remember Greg used to complain about this all the time, that, you know, Mario games don't have good combat, and they never have had good combat. Mm-hmm. And the whole problem with the bosses is it's not just another enemy that you can just run past or try to avoid or even use to help you solve the platforming in the level. The boss makes you stop, and it makes you fight, and it's the worst part of the game.
Yeah.
So they've never been a strong suit for the Mario series.
So the boss battles in... there's two boss phases in 3D Land. One is... the platforming stage where you have to hit the button. Those are kind of a nice mix of using the game's mechanics.
Yeah.
And the present danger of the boss. The problem is you then go into what is the actual boss fight, and those are just abysmal.
Mm-hmm.
If he just fell in the lava and that was it, great. Perfect.
At least, like, they've shown some attempts to redesign their bosses. I mean, the... spoilers, at the end of 3D Land, instead of actually fighting Bowser, you're running away from him and towards the screen, and it's, you know, it's basically the set piece, and it's all about platforming. And it's the same thing with New Super Mario Brothers Wii. They decided to go in a completely different direction and make you go through this maze of bricks that Bowser chases you through. Right, or maybe they're not bricks, but anyway, you have to flee from Bowser, and you've got fire.
Yeah, but you're also talking about the final boss of the game, and these games have a lot more bosses before that, and they do repeat.
Yeah.
Even the Koopa kids are not that much different from each other.
No.
And even you go back to Super Mario World, there's like two versions of Wendy. It's like there's like basically four different bosses, and they repeat each one of them twice with different characters.
Yeah, and it's always three bops on the head, and they're done.
Yeah, you have the Reznor thing, which gets very repetitive towards the end of the game because you've done it so many times.
Instead of having a boss at the end of each world, they should just put whatever corresponding Star Road level, you know, at the end of this that world, and that's going to be like the last challenge of that world.
It should be the boss level, not the boss fight.
Yeah, because I just beat New Super Luigi U with all the coins, and so I went through the Star World and. It wasn't that difficult, but it was a lot of fun, and it was very, very, it was, you know, like fire everywhere and like spinning wheels and, just, you know, very intense. And that's basically the kind of challenge and the kind of feeling that I want to get from an end boss in a Mario game.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like they kind of look at it like the bosses are sort of unimportant and the platforming is what's important, which is how they should be looking at it, but. Why not just take that? Why not just go all the way with that?
I think because they feel like they have to have put it in there. So
yeah, kind of a serious staple.
But it's so perfunctory at this point. It's up there with like having 120 stars in the 3D games. It's so arbitrary. It's just tradition, and there's not a good reason for it.
They're just speed bumps at this point.
Do you think like people keep asking for the Koopa kids to come back, and the team over there misinterprets this and are like, okay, we'll give you the same battles over and over again. That's what you're asking for.
I think they're happy to reuse any characters or assets that they've created for past games rather than have to create new ones.
Anything you can reuse when you're coding is the best.
The only way I can think of for boss battles in Mario to really be interesting and worthwhile is if they actually made you use all of the power-ups. And Galaxy does this occasionally. Like, there's that good boss, and I think it's in Galaxy 2, where you use the drill. And I like stuff like that. I like when it's more focused. It asks you to do more with a mechanic that you're already somewhat familiar with, but it's not just running around and trying to get behind Bowser and grab his tail, and it's not just jumping on an enemy in 3D, which is that's not really a thing. It's not really much of a mechanic. So I would love for 3D World to act, you know, it has all these different crazy power-ups. How about each boss is focused on one power-up, just like in a Zelda game, and you really have to show some mastery over that power-up to beat the boss.
Yeah, I was going to say, there was a demo of a boss at E3, and it was pretty cool. Like, it was pretty involved. You had these different things that you could climb on as a cat, and then you could jump from them and home in on the enemy. So that was like, there were more layers there than there usually are in boss fights and in Mario games.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say it was, it was on the tier with the good bosses from Galaxy 1 and 2. What concerns me is that we're going to end up fighting that same boss three different times in different colors, because that's what this team does, and I'm really sick of it. I love their game so much, but the bosses are so repetitive, and they have found a few interesting boss designs, but then they seem to be so excited when they do that they just can't wait to use it three or four times in the same game. And Galaxy 2 had that boss rush level that's fucking irritating. I mean, who would want to do that? I don't get it. So outside of like speedrunners, I mean, that should not be part of completing the game, is to have to fight through all those repetitive bosses again without dying. It's just crazy. And then there's a comet where you have to do it on with only having one hit point.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. It's just, I hate that stuff. So I think these are very valid criticisms. And if they keep you from enjoying the game, that's too bad. But I would also say, even in, you know, Galaxy 1, 2, Mario 3D Land, I mean, the bosses are such a small part of the game. So if you don't like those games, or if you actively hate those, there's probably a lot more to it than that. And, I think it's unusual, but it doesn't make you a bad person.
Yeah, I mean, what other games? What other games would we suggest?
Well, it's just like, it sounds like he has Rayman? Pet peeves that we just don't share, right? Like, I've got my own pet peeves.
Right. I mean, bosses were just one of his points, not.
I mean, he says he loves Banjo-Kazooie. I don't think that game has very good bosses either.
But they have some variety to them.
Yeah, though. They do.
I've never played Banjo-Kazooie. Is it like, do you not go back to the same levels over and over again?
Oh, you totally do.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can't use for more jiggies, but the levels are—I mean, the levels are so big in those cases. The jiggies are spread out over these huge maps.
It's true, and it's also worth knowing in Banjo-Kazooie, when you find a jiggy, which is equivalent to like a star in Mario 64,
you don't leave.
Right, you can continue playing the level and just move on to the next one. So it does feel more continuous. It feels like you're going into this world. You're doing whatever you want to do, whatever you can find. And then you leave and you go on to a different one. It's much less mission-based than Mario 64.
Because it doesn't reconfigure itself for every jiggy.
Right, right.
And I mentioned this when I was playing it recently. It's about a year and a half ago now, maybe more than that.
It was the HD version you were playing?
Yeah, I was just shocked by the fact that staying in the world is really convenient.
Yeah.
It's because you can just burn through jiggies real fast.
You know, the people left at Rare probably are not capable of it, but I would absolutely love for a new Banjo-Kazooie sequel. You know, even if I have to buy a freaking Xbox One to play it. I would be so thrilled with that, just because it, especially now that the 3D Mario games have gotten away from that formula and they've become very different in their whole other thing. I really feel like that's a kind of 3D platformer that not really anyone's making anymore. And I don't think Ratchet and Clank fills that gap. It's much more about shooting and hiding behind cover and weapons and stuff.
What about the first Jak and Daxter?
I don't know. Even that game's 10 years old or more now. Actually, it's more than 10 years old.
Yeah.
So
what I will say, and I know people are going to hate me for it, is that it doesn't feel contiguous because they take you out of it. The Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts game does have some of the same charm to it.
Yeah, I get that, but it's not really a platformer in the same way.
I mean, it's totally a platformer. It's just a different kind of platformer.
I get you, but I also didn't enjoy building the vehicles. I didn't really like the physics of the vehicles. I felt like everything I made was really underpowered and made it very, very irritating to do things.
That ends once you get the jet engine, or when you get six of them and just go crazy,
and the game breaks.
Oh, I just slammed it into a wall, and basically asteroids smashed the planet Earth.
No, I'm not slamming on Nuts and Bolts, because I think it's a very interesting game and an interesting direction to take. But I do wish they would go back and make a Banjo-Kazooie 3. And, you know, do something new, but that harkens a lot more back to the first two games. Cause I really, really like those games. And I always felt, even back in 98, when Banjo-Kazooie came out, that in a lot of ways, it is better than Mario 64.
Well, it should be.
It's 2 years newer, and it uses a lot more advanced programming techniques on that system, and it gets a lot more out of the hardware. But it's also, it's very refreshing. It's made halfway across the world by a completely different group of people who have a very different sense of style and sense of humor. And it comes across as being, you know, similarly high quality, but a little more polished in a number of areas, and also just different. It's different enough that it really does feel original. It really feels like its own thing. Tui is also very good, although I'd be curious to play the HD version maybe one day, because that game was a little difficult to play on N64.
It's got the same issues. It's still pretty chuggy.
Oh, that's too bad. All right, well, let's move on to the next email, and I'm going to read that one. It's from Justin, and he writes, "First, I want to thank you for doing the show. It has become something I honestly look forward to each week. With that said, one thing that has come up often during the show is the concept of evolution. In episode 349, it was mentioned that the Mario and Luigi games no longer evolved enough. The team also had a similar sentiment about Pikmin 3. In your opinion, at what point does a game evolve enough to become interesting? Could a game evolve too much and lose its identity?"
Oh, absolutely. The developers of long-running series are kind of stuck between trying to appeal to new people and trying not to change things too much, because then you've got the hardcore fan base that will decry the changes.
Well, it's a balancing act, right?
Yeah, but at a certain point, people kind of just want more of the same, you know? Or at least they seem to. And they don't want their series to change too much, so I...
We just coincidentally, I say this because I didn't look at what email was next, Nuts and Bolts. That game evolved super crazy. And I think it turned off most of the fans of that series, which is why there wasn't a sequel.
I mean, you're saying it's a platforming game, but it's sure
it is a platform.
It doesn't look like one, or at least not one.
Well, it evolved to the point where it no longer, but it's totally a platforming game. A lot of times it's you need to get from A to B, and A is really fucking far away and hard to get to.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to kind of quantify, but each game, I think what happens is games lose the feel of the game. I mean, I think of you know, something like Metroid Prime. Metroid Prime is so good because it maintains the feel. They were able to capture the feel of the original Metroid games in that game, even though it was totally different. And that's why it was so great. And that's the thing. When a game loses that kind of feel of the original game, and you know it when you play it, when it's gone, you can't get that back.
You can't get that back. You absolutely can't get that back.
So I have a theory, actually, about you know, pleasing fan bases or finding the balance between doing something fresh and interesting and you know, not pissing people off. I think if you start early, so when a franchise is in the early, you know, maybe first two or three games, if you show the fan base that you're willing to really reset things and introduce radical new ideas, and you're not going to hold anything sacred, then you condition the fans of that franchise to be ready for new ideas every time.
Yeah, it's very true.
As creators, it gives you the license to really go crazy and be very original every time. And you're going to have certain games that maybe kind of fall outside of what people really enjoyed, but at least you had the opportunity to try something really extreme. Zelda is an interesting case in that, you know, you went from Zelda 1 to Zelda 2, such different games. And I think, you know, by the time you finish with Zelda 2, it's like, well, you may not like it as much as the first one, but at least you know it's not the same damn thing over again. And by that time, they can go back to, which Mario followed a similar track for those of us in America, at least. But with Zelda, I mean, with the third game, you go back to the original formula, but now the technology has changed so drastically that you're now telling a complete story, and you've got far more intricate mechanics and much more deliberately designed dungeons and stuff like that, which are really new to the series at that point. And so again, you now have people who say, well, I love the Zelda series, even though they're all a little bit different from each other. And some of them are a lot different. Whereas you get stuff like Pokemon, where the first maybe 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 games that you release in that series are so close together, and they're so similar to each other. Maybe partly for compatibility reasons and other things, you know, but and maybe because it's aimed at a younger audience. But at that point, you get people so ingrained. I mean, if the repetition doesn't throw you off right away, like it did for me, you know, I wasn't interested in playing Gold and Silver. I'm like, I just played Red and Blue. I don't need to play the same game over again with like a couple of different features. So for me, it was an instant turnoff. But if you are into that, you will be captured by it, and then it becomes very difficult for them to change the formula. Dragon Quest had exactly the same problem, probably even worse than Pokemon. And so now when the creators behind Pokemon say, we really want to do something pretty different with this, it's very hard for them. I mean, in X and Y, they finally update the sounds that the Pokemon make, the little cries.
Yeah, and they finally made them actual noises.
Yeah, they finally got rid of the original 8-bit Game Boy horrible sounds that all those Pokemon made, and they replaced them with like higher quality samples. And there's people who are upset about this. It's like, guys, it's been 15 years. Let go. Let the creators do their thing.
It's like the more popular these series get and the longer they run, people get an insane amount of ownership over them. Like, I just think of like something like in Black Ops 2. If they nerf a gun, people riot. They literally get death threats. Why are you nerfing that gun? I'm going to come to your house and kill you. It's nuts.
We decreased the rate of fire by 0.2 a second. Ah!
Yeah. I mean, literally it's like that. And, you know, it's tough and.
Yeah. In the case of Mario and Luigi, I was the one, I think, that said I didn't want to play these games anymore. They just were too much of the same over and over again. And I think it's mostly because of the combat. Like, it's the whole timing-based thing, I really can't stand anymore. I don't know if it's really just because of the fact that it's not new anymore, or if it's just something that doesn't interest me anymore, but I used to see a lot of positives in the kind of combat system that these games have, and now I find that they annoy me more than they appeal to me. Like, the timing makes the combat more active, but at the same time, it means you have to pay attention every time you enter a battle. And it means that the battles will last a certain amount of time every time, even though you don't necessarily feel like, you know, fighting at that point.
Well, partly because the animations take a lot longer to play out when they have to be interactive.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it slows down the pace of the battle system a lot.
Right. And you're just, you know, like, you're just trying to explore an area, or you're going back to an area that you've already explored. You're just trying to find, like, the hidden beans or what have you. And, the enemies just keep, like, you keep bumping into enemies. That was a big problem in Paper Mario and the 3DS. Like, the enemies would always rush you. So every time you were looking for the next place to go, you had basically no choice but to engage with the enemies. And it got so tedious so fast.
Yeah, it actually gets in the way of you playing the game.
And I think there comes a certain point where, yeah, like, I've had enough, and I've played enough of a series. Perhaps I've played the remakes of past games, and I feel like, wow, this is so much like the new games. Why am I even playing remakes, or why am I even playing the new games? And it just, eventually, you know, interest fades, and that's fine.
But, I mean, these complaints, I think the original complaints about the lack of progress, about the lack of newness in the mechanics of games like Pikmin 3, you know, a lot of it comes from the fact that, you know, all four of us guys are, you know, relatively close to the same age, or at least we were playing Nintendo stuff back in the late 80s and early 90s when they were doing these radical shifts from one game to the next, even within the same series. And we've seen them basically stop doing that over the past decade. And I think that's why we complain about it. It's why it affects us so much. And if you're younger and you grew up on these games, including stuff like Pokemon that are, you know, very static and they very slow to change over time. And if you're used to that, this doesn't seem like a big deal at all. It's like, hey, why would I complain about more Pikmin? I liked it the last time. And I'm like, yeah, but look at Mario 2 and look at Zelda 2. And look at even Metroid 2 is pretty incredibly different than the first game. You know, and that's just the stuff that we were raised on. And, you know, so we have somewhat different expectations as to how different a sequel is allowed to be. And I like that. I always want the creators to try something different. And if it doesn't work, okay, that's too bad. You know, you'll try something different. Maybe you'll get it next time. But at least, you know, go for broke And when we were kids, I felt like Nintendo in particular did that more than they do now. You know, when you look at Mario Kart 8, and it's exactly the fucking same thing as Mario Kart Wii and Mario Kart 7, that really bothers me, because you even go back to like Super Mario Kart versus the second game in the series, Mario Kart 64, they look nothing alike and they play nothing alike. Even in that series, we've seen much more drastic jumps from one game to the next. And the pace of progress has slowed down so much that I'm just getting a little tired of some of these franchises.
And you've got the Wii U, which has this gamepad, which is supposed to enable us to do new things, and yet they don't seem to be using it at all to kind of push these series forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's always a risk that they would just introduce a gimmick and that we wouldn't really, like, it wouldn't be something that adds to the game, but it doesn't seem like they really tried. It's just, well, you can control your cart with gamepad, use the analog stick, or you can tilt the gamepad. And it's exactly what you've been doing for the past 15 years.
Yeah, I think one of the kind of undercurrents in all of this is sort of the echo chamber that is the internet. And I think a lot of game companies are kind of still trying to figure out, I think just the industry as a whole right now is still trying to figure out sort of how to deal with, how to make their customers happy while getting this deluge of demands from their customers, right? It's like, we've kind of crossed that threshold where at first it was like, oh, cool. We have stuff like Facebook and Twitter and comment threads and all of this stuff that we can get feedback directly from our fans. But then they realized, holy shit, now we're getting feedback from every single person on the planet all the time, 24/7, 365.
And they all want you to make the game the way they want.
Yeah, saying wildly contradictory things.
Yeah. And how do you do that? I mean, that's the thing. Like back in the day, they could completely change a game series because they didn't have their audience rioting in the streets as soon as a rumor, not even fact, a rumor gets out that they might be changing something, some cherished game feature.
John, stop nerfing my guns.
I think as consumers of video games and as lovers of video games, we need to be willing to put some faith in the people who create the games that we love and trust them to do something that challenges our preconceptions of what is normal for a series, especially for these franchise games. Because, you know, if we keep throwing demands at the people who make these games, then at some point they're making the games to our specifications and they're no longer being creative. They're no longer making the games that they want to make. It's part of what's exciting about this indie game movement, where you have all these tiny teams, in some cases just one person, and they're just making the game they want to make, and they're not getting input from other people because no one else even knows that that game exists before it's pretty much finished. And so you get these much more distilled, pure visions from creators as to what they want that game to be. And we used to get that more in the home console games, including from stuff like Nintendo. And I wonder if maybe this is a factor of, you know, the budgets going up, the risk getting greater for financially for the company as they release these games, and that, you know, they've got stockholders who say, look, this worked last time, you better make the next game just like that one because we want it to work again. And don't you dare do something that might piss people off, you know. And I can't think of Nintendo doing something really radical with the franchise since something like Wind Waker, which, even though it ultimately turned out to be okay, it wasn't a huge seller for them, but obviously the critical response was good. I do feel like that burned them in a way, and it feels like they've been a lot more conservative with their franchises ever since.
Well, you still got people who've never played the Wind Waker to this day and haven't played a Zelda game since. Like, they were just like, oh, fuck this. 5-year-old Link? You know, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
that perhaps taught them the wrong lesson. I was reading, like, this is kind of, well, only semi-related, but I was reading this good article. Unfortunately, I can't remember where, but it was basically just telling people it's okay when series die. And I really found myself agreeing with that. Like, it's okay if they stop producing the same game over and over again. Sometimes, like, especially when the original creator is gone, when no one in the team really knows what to do next, like how to push the series forward. You know, it's probably a blessing at some point that someone is pulling the plug. Right now, I don't know why I'm thinking of Final Fantasy. But yeah, like the
well, I think it's completely appropriate.
I think 15 looks pretty fresh for that. That
we've seen nothing of 15. Like there was that trailer. Trailers can look good. I'm used to trailers looking good.
I'm curious to see if they will pull that one out
of their ass.
I'd like to see Alpha Dream making something new, something else than Mario and Luigi. I'd like to see Intelligent System, you know, perhaps, even though I really want an Advance Wars, like maybe branch out and do something else, not Fire Emblem, not Advance Wars, and not whatever else that they usually make. Yeah, try something different. That would be nice.
When I got annoyed by the announcement of Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, that wasn't because I wanted Retro to be making a Metroid game, although I would have been a lot more okay with that than Donkey Kong. But a lot of the rumors and the hopes and the dreams of people who like Retro Studios were that they were going to be doing an original franchise, which we so rarely see from Nintendo these days. And so to me, the most bitter part about that was that not only was it not an original franchise, it's probably one of the least interesting franchises they could be working on, in my opinion.
Plus, your dreams of a crossover between Star Fox and Metroid were just dashed in an instant.
I've already read that comic. It doesn't end the way you expect it to. To sort of go to my love-hate relationship with the gaming society, I mean, I own a shit ton of Mega Man games,
mm-hmm.
including ones that I know deep down in my heart are not good games. And I get excited when the opportunity to buy another one comes up, even though in my head I'm like, what the fuck are you thinking? But, see, the idea that, obviously I haven't read the article that Guillaume was referencing, but I think sometimes it's probably okay for a franchise to die, and other times it doesn't die because it was its natural time to die. It dies because people in charge just don't care.
Yeah.
And they don't handle it correctly. I think Mega Man is a great example of franchises that have both grown too slowly, grown too fast, and grown just perfectly. I think if you look at the transition they made when they jumped to the Super Nintendo and said, we need to make something that's really different but has the same core. When they went from Mega Man, I want to say it was 5, was the last one when X came out.
Yes.
Like, it's night and day. I mean,
that's part of why X is probably my favorite Mega Man game of all, because it is familiar, but it's also so fresh. It adds so many new things. It's exciting.
What it really adds, though, more than anything else, is speed.
Yeah.
Mega Man was never a fast game before X came out. It was always kind of slow. Mega Man is not fast. He didn't have dash, and he couldn't wall jump like this. Whereas X took him and made him a, you know, a kinetic character. He's quick, he's aggressive, they attituded him in a way that wasn't like Sonic's ridiculousness. Like, he got attitude, but he's still that same, you know, he's still, not Wonder Boy. Yeah, Wonder Boy. Astro Boy. He's still Astro Boy.
Yeah, well, even much more so in the X series.
But he's grown up Astro Boy now. He's not a mere image of Astro Boy. He is adult. He's dealing, you know, he doubts himself, but he's just the most pure character ever in a game at this point. I mean, he basically is just like, he never does anything wrong.
And then they ran that series into the ground as well.
Yeah.
The first few X games do iterate well. Like, they add things, they stuff that you had to get power-ups, they just give to you. In X4, the addition of Zero as a playable character who plays distinct from how he plays, from X plays, gives you a completely different combat style to work with. But then they just sort of run them into the ground. And then you have Mega Man games where they just went nuts, which, like, X7 is the 3D one, I think.
Yeah.
That's just not good. It's just not a good game. They just said, well, we need to make this game 3D now. And they did. And it was bad.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I was so excited about Legends 3, because Legends is not a great game. It isn't. I mean, it's cool. It's fun. It's interesting. But mechanically, it is a bad game.
2 is much, much better. They refined it.
Two is better. It is. But, I mean, you still have tank controls, which don't really make any sense. But, like, I was excited for the opportunity for them to iterate on that formula because it's different. But it still had the same feeling, even though it's a completely different world. It felt like a Mega Man game. I remember playing Legends for the first time going, holy shit, this is Mega Man 3D and not terrible.
Yeah.
I remember the same thing.
Yeah, like, I was convinced it was going to be an abomination, and I'm playing, I'm like, whoa, this works. I'm really happy.
Yeah, and there are, you know, I totally get the sentiment of just being comfortable with the game series never changing. Like, when after we did Mega Man 3, the retroactive, I was just, I went and played 1, 2, and 4, and 5, and 6, and I was just addicted.
Oh, I love 5. I love 5 so much.
I enjoyed them all. Like, I was having fun with all of them, and then I hit 7, and I was like, this is not the same.
Oh, 7's a shit show.
And I tried after that, like, I was, I also have the Mega Man X collection, and I tried getting into that, and no, it's not the same. And then I stopped.
6 through 8 don't exist to me. Like, just go ahead and leave them
alone. Well, I think the downfall of that series was they knew that they could churn them out cheaply.
Yeah, that's a big part of it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, a lot of these series, I mean, you kind of see the influence of these big companies where they're like, people seem to like this formula. Let's just run this formula into the ground.
Battlefield.
Yeah, I mean, you're seeing that right now with, you know...
What happened to the Battlefield franchise under the influence of Call of Duty?
You're seeing it. I mean, all these series, they're all going to, you know, they're going to go down and, you know, they aren't going to be as popular going forward. But yeah, I mean, it's just really something that, you know, there's a fine line between evolving something so that it no longer resembles what it used to be and evolving it slowly, like Johnny said, kind of doing it over time in a way that makes sense. You know, that kind of brings people along with you as opposed to getting stuck in one rut and having to yank people up out of it and completely, you know.
Or just jerking them along every game so they never have a chance to get comfortable.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think the best franchises look at the, you know, the characters and the places that they've created and the gameplay ideas that they bring forward, not as a formula, but as kind of like a sandbox, like a with constraints. Like it's a well-defined play space with corners that they can see, but the average player cannot. And so there's all this design space. I mean, that's the term that people use. You know, it's a design space. It's multidimensional. And they can find new things to do within that space, and it still feels like that world.
Yeah.
But if you look at your game as like a template where all you have to do is take out parts A, B, and C and put in parts D, E, and F, and everything else is basically the same, then that's how you get into franchise fatigue. And it's also how you develop these fans that have almost no tolerance for any kind of fresh ideas. They want the same thing with slightly different colors and different names on the characters, and they just want to play through it again. And, you know, I mean, I feel that, like you guys said, I feel that way about certain games too. I mean, there is a comfort with those games that are that steady and that familiar. I can see the appeal of that, but also I think as creative people, if you're a game creator, you really need to avoid that situation. And I think you need to build a level of trust with your audience where they not only are okay with you challenging them, but they want you to challenge their expectations of what's going to be in your game. That's when you have the healthiest back and forth between the fans and the creators.
I would say, though, that if you're there needs to be a certain – with the back and forth, the creators need to listen. If they do something, the fans go, whoa! They need to be reactionary to that.
Also, in the cases of stuff like Wind Waker, you also need to have the courage of your convictions and say, look, we did this for a reason. It's going to throw people off, but maybe they just need time to get used to it. And maybe we need to communicate better why we did it and what are the advantages of doing it this new way. And in a lot of cases, that works out. You know, I mean, look at Microsoft. I mean, they're probably worse off now than they would have been if they'd stuck to their guns early and just did a better job explaining why they were doing things the way they were.
Yep.
Sure, and that can be your reaction, is understanding better how to communicate the idea. Or maybe you go, okay, there's, you know, I feel like sometimes creative types will get stuck in this, no, it's my vision, you don't understand, kind of pissing match. And especially with these much more engaged, independent game developers, you see that a lot. You see these news stories about developer X gets in Twitter war with supposed fans or some dumb shit like that. Like, there is a point where you need to listen to your fans, but you also need to be willing to try things.
With the indie space, though, that's also a it's a situation in which there's no breakdown, there's no filter between the people making the game and the fans. It's that one guy is making that game, so if you complain about it on Twitter, you might upset him so much that it has a real negative impact.
If you're making a game by yourself, don't have a Twitter account.
That's probably a really good rule of thumb.
Just don't do it. It's not worth it. In fact, I would advise most people don't have Twitter accounts. It's probably not for your best. I mean, I just use mine to troll games I'm actively playing. So who am I really burning? Myself? Yeah, pretty much. I'm making fun of myself. So if you learn anything from RFN, it's delete your Twitter profile.
I can't completely disagree.
Hey, interesting discussion. So actually, John has the next letter.
All right, Joseph writes in and he says, I am a gamer that prefers most of my games to have a deep online multiplayer aspect. That said, do you deeply anticipate any online games for Nintendo systems on the horizon? I can only think of Dragon Quest X, Call of Duty, and Mario Kart as immediate examples. I think that the Wii U is a perfect system for online games, with the gamepad's ability to easily switch between programs and the Miiverse as a consistent companion in FAQ. If there are no quality online games coming out for Wii U, I fear I will only buy the Wii U for Wii Fit, and therefore never really consider it a true gaming console in the way that I play games. I would love to hear from you guys about your online gaming habits. Are you addicted to multiplayer like me?
No.
Not really.
I would say I probably am the most of the panel. Definitely everything from Monster Hunter. You know, I haven't really been playing too many first-person shooters lately. But I had a phase where I was, you know, playing a lot of Halo, playing a lot of Black Ops 2. And that's the thing. I feel like in terms of its kind of space, Nintendo has really never chased any of their consoles being the multiplayer console. I mean, that's more of a Microsoft thing, more of a Sony thing.
They have gotten a lot better, though.
Yeah, but it's still kind of, you can do it if you want. There it is, out there.
Yeah, it's always been kind of wishy-washy. And, you know, I think it's hard probably for companies to really get behind it if they recognize that the console maker isn't really behind it themselves. You know, I mean, Microsoft, it's very obvious that they are extremely committed. I mean, look at what they're doing with Xbox One.
Charging for multiplayer?
Well, I mean, they all charge for multiplayer in one way or another, but
so is Sony this time.
But that's the thing, though. What do they do right out of the gate? They're like, okay, well, for Ghosts and, you know, BF4, right out of the gate, we have the DLC day one. You know, they're obviously paying these companies to have that DLC day one. So right away, they're basically sticking a flag in the sand saying, we are the console that you're going to want to buy if you're serious about getting the DLC the first day.
If you're serious about this game.
Like, they're obviously throwing their weight behind that. Like, this is where you want to be for multiplayer. Whereas Nintendo is just sort of like, yeah, sure, you know, companies are welcome to do it.
Online is also a feature we offer versus, dude, yo, we online, bro.
Well, I mean, you know, we do have Mario Kart 8 coming out in probably roughly 6 months. And that is the one Nintendo series where they really have pushed online play. And they've done a very good job with it and increasingly better. Like every single time that they release a new Mario Kart, it is noticeably better.
The DS game was, if you go back and try it, was abysmal.
Oh, brutal.
So I will say one game that's missed here, and I know we have chastised this series in the past, but you have to think Smash Brothers on Wii will be better.
Yes. Well, I mean, Kid Icarus Uprising on 3DS is drastically better than Brawl on Wii. So I think Sakurai in particular has learned a lot about how to do online games and how to build them, and I expect that the new Smash Brothers will be in a completely different league.
All right, let's say the online function is just great, but what do they do with it? Do they allow random tournaments? I think they've gotten more acceptable of non-friend based communication.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Miiverse is a big open wound for that kind of thing.
But all that stuff is icing on the cake because they have never had a competent online Smash Brothers game. If they just get that basic functionality correct, and they let you play against people who are on your Wii U friends list, which I think is basically built into the architecture of the console.
It is, yeah.
Then they've provided something that the world has never seen before.
Sure.
And Smash Brothers in particular is such a popular game. I mean, you're talking in one game, or at least, you know, that plus Mario Kart, they have now brought a significant fraction of their user base into playing these games online. And that's something that Nintendo's never had. So, I mean, that one game could make a huge difference in their overall online strategy. And they don't have to do it really fancy. They just have to make it fucking work this time.
Yeah.
As Link, to be considered a modern online game, it needs to have more than just friend matches. I think events and stuff like that would be super easy because they could tap into the enthusiasm for people who don't like to play Smash Brothers in a way that's fun.
Yeah, but there's no other online game like Smash Brothers. So even if they do it really plain.
Yeah, but there are a lot of other online fighting games. So you have to at least have the lion's share of features that are out there in most fighting games today.
I think you need to have tournaments. You need to be able to do, you know, events, stuff like that. I don't think it needs to be that fancy, but that's just those two things would be...
Look, I think they will do that stuff, and I think they should, but I don't think they need to.
I disagree.
Because, again, a lot of the people who are interested in playing Smash Brothers online have no interest in the competitive fighting game scene. I would never use a tournament mode. Have no interest whatsoever.
Well, what if you could do a tournament with your friends?
I probably would never bother. It's too much work to get all that set up. I'd rather just say, hey, let's play a game. And if I can do that, I'm so happy. I'm in a totally different place than I was with Brawl. And that now becomes a game I will play for hundreds and hundreds of hours, just like Melee. So if they actually do that, again, I think they're, I mean, you call it a, you know, it has to be competitive with other fighting games, but it's not a fighting game in the sense that the audience for Smash Brothers is so much broader than even something like Street Fighter 4.
I mean, they don't have to do anything beyond having normal online fighting, but...
I think for the criticism sphere of that to be considered successful, the press, the enthusiast media, I think it's got to have at least some of those modes. I think otherwise we'll just say, well, it's just friend matches over the internet. I think to get good word of mouth, they need to have at least some of those modes.
That would help, yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the critics are probably going to be unhappy with whatever Nintendo does, so I kind of...
No, but I think there's a difference between them being unhappy and being actively saying this is pedestrian.
Online multiplayer in fighting games, it's no longer new, it's no longer novel. So if there are basic things that are missing, people are going to be like, come on.
Yeah, exactly. They can't do anything that people go, well, how did they miss this? This is so basic.
Yeah.
So if that means they have to include, you know, events, where like maybe they just put out an event every day. It's some weird ass tweak of the rule set, and you just and like the person who clears it fastest gets Wii points.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, we haven't heard about it much yet because I think the online features aren't actually functional at the time of this recording. But Pokemon X and Y is a pretty big online release for them, and at this point, Pokemon's been online for so long that they don't really talk about it that much.
I mean, I loved the caves.
Yeah, they were awesome. That was really impressive.
They completely cut the legs out of another game they were publishing in Fossil Hunter, which had the exact same mode. It came out like 2 weeks earlier.
That was a local-only mode in Diamond and Pearl, but did they take it online in the later games?
Because
I used to go like going in the caves by myself even just to find fossils in Diamond.
I thought it was online compatible.
I think it was too. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, because I thought you could leave stuff for your friends to find later.
Yeah, you could.
Well, regardless, one game that it's a ways out, but also wasn't listed here, X.
Yeah.
Which is so, if you go back and watch that first trailer, is so clearly online, it's not funny.
Right.
And in fact, I had I had our Japanese staff translate it, and it's just people shooting the shit. Like, to the extent of, hey, you gonna look out for me while we go out there today? And like, eh, I don't really know.
In order for Xbox Live to be as good as it is and PSN to be as good as it is, right? That took years for them to get those services to that point. And Microsoft is obviously, I mean, Nintendo is probably, they're probably 5 years behind the game in terms of what they're doing with their online stuff.
I mean, Microsoft had the entire Xbox to practice.
Yeah.
The Xbox One, not the Xbox One.
Shut up.
And I mean, I think even in terms of making online games, I think that Nintendo now has a lot more experience doing it across both portable and their console platforms.
And they fixed a lot of the problems inherent in the system itself. So I think they're no longer nearly as constrained by the system architecture, which on DS and on Wii in particular, that was a huge problem. It was just such a massive headache to take anything online, even if the actual online part of the game was competent, which in many cases it wasn't.
And while they may be quite a few years behind their rivals, they also get the opportunity of watching what they did.
Yeah, I do think they are catching up at a faster pace. I think they're accelerating in their catch up on a lot of this stuff.
It's very easy to learn the lessons. I mean, like, do you think any of the competitors are going to allow their situation to have a data breach like Sony had? God, no. Because they probably all went back and did 10,000-hour case studies on what the fuck happened.
Yeah, well, I don't really know about that. I have my doubts about that.
Oh,
but
they should have.
I mean, let's be honest. They've gotten beaten up about this for probably about the last 7 or 8 years.
Right.
So, I mean, it's pretty obvious that they've gotten a ton of feedback, and they know exactly what's wrong with their services and what they need to correct.
And John, you know, the other big part of it that is going to drive them to continue to do better and do things they've never done before online is that even now in Japan, online gaming is becoming more popular. Mm-hmm. And you only have to look at Monster Hunter 4 on 3DS, which is the first handheld Monster Hunter to be online.
Yep.
And that's not even a version of, I mean, that is, you know, that's the first version of Monster Hunter 4.
Right.
So the online play is going to, eventually they will port that to other systems, probably including Wii U, and they will add even more features on top of what they're already doing, which I've heard is very good, even on the 3DS. So, you know, that now their home market is now showing an interest, and they're going to have a demand for this kind of game. I think that will also push Nintendo to do a better job on it.
Yeah. I mean, and also I think kind of the rise of the iPhone really kind of slapped Nintendo across the face and just said, hey, people actually want that kind of experience. They're looking for that kind of experience. And also they want that to be tied in with a web-based experience. So that's why I think you see them coming out with Miiverse on web and stuff like that. Stuff that really, you know, 5 years ago, you would never have expected from Nintendo. I mean,
yeah, it's true. You know,
it's just stuff that, you know, just didn't even enter into their head, but now they're like, they've kind of woken up and they've been like, hey, you know, we're getting our ass handed to us in certain segments that we probably could have been in if we would have maybe played our cards a little differently. So, you know, and that's the thing. Of course, they want to stick to their guns and, you know, they have their own platforms to protect and that kind of stuff. But you're just kind of seeing them be more open to, you know, like the Pokemon cloud storage stuff.
Oh, yeah. Which you have to pay for.
Yeah. I mean, like that stuff, like that came right. Yeah. You have to pay for it, but that came out of the blue. I'm like, What the hell?
Yeah, it was a very... So I missed that whole press thing until... Like, I just heard about it, like, based off a tweet. I'm like, what the fuck's he talking about? I thought somebody was just trolling Twitter.
Yeah, I was like, what? Storing your Pokemon in the cloud? What the hell is this? Sure enough.
It's just... I mean, each Pokemon is just a collection of numbers. Why do we need... What?
They should broaden that out to more than just Pokemon, and they call it the Lakitu service. Because you put all your stuff up in the cloud.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Just exactly something that Nintendo would do.
Exactly.
I don't want it.
I want it so bad.
That's kind of how Nintendo rolls, right? They sort of have these kind of pilot projects, and they kind of work out all the kinks on something where it's really kind of low risk. Like, you know, if somebody loses their Pokemon, who gives a crap? You know, really.
Well, you just regenerate them. You just regenerate the fucking Pokemon. They're just numbers.
I mean, I'm sure down the line you'll see some sort of kind of cloud rollout because, I mean, ultimately Nintendo really, they're a company that goes wherever the money is. And I think they probably see how much money Sony is making off of PSN and, you know, Xbox Live obviously makes a whole lot of money regardless of how you feel about the pricing. But Nintendo looks at it and they say, hey, you know, people are willing to pay for these kinds of services.
Well, I mean, look, new Super Luigi U, you know, they added a huge DLC pack to their premier Wii U game for the first year. And, you know, they did it. They turned it around pretty quickly. They released that while the game was still relevant. It's very good. It's priced very reasonably. I think that's DLC. I think it's probably one of the best DLC packs I've ever paid for. And, to see it come from Nintendo is frankly shocking. So
yeah.
I love to see them experimenting and I hope that they're being rewarded for it when they do it well, like in the case of Luigi. But you know, to go back just really quickly to the final question of the email, am I addicted to multiplayer? No, but I'll tell you why. It's because I grew up on Nintendo stuff and I dabble once or twice a year. I'll play a multiplayer game online, maybe just for a couple hours. And I'm like, okay, that was cool. And then I move on. Because that's not why I buy games in the first place. For me, it's always a bonus or an extra feature. So, you know, if the games that I prefer to play, which are primarily Nintendo games, if they become online and they do it really well, maybe that is the channel through which I and a lot of other people will become addicted to playing online multiplayer. It just hasn't happened yet because they're so far behind.
All the people close to me are more PC gamers, and there was a time when basically I would have like my weekly game of Left 4 Dead 2 with them. So that was fun. That lasted a long time, and the whole co-op nature of the game was really, I think, what drew me in, plus the fact that, you know, like I could just chat with my buddies. I kind of wish that we could have this sort of experience with a Nintendo game on the Wii U, but I can't imagine what it could be.
I would love to play New Super or Mario 3D World with all of you guys. Just the four of us online, voice chat, playing that game. I mean, we're going to, you know, troll each other, and it's going to be a total clusterfuck, but it would be that if we were all in the same room. So, you know, that's you know, I go back to the time that, you know, I asked the guy if Wii Fit Plus was going to have online, and he's like, no, we kind of felt this was something you would play with your family. And I said, my family lives 1,000 miles away. You know, not all of us have the access to get a big group of people in who want to play video games and do it well. So it may not always be the optimal experience, but give me the option to do this stuff online, because then I can actually use it.
You know, I think a lot of it too is the fact that online multiplayer has this stigma of always being about competitive play and always getting trolled, all that kind of stuff. That's the thing. I mean, that's not the case. I mean, you know, like Yelm just said, you know, something like Left 4 Dead, where you're working with people, that's really, really fun.
And Monster Hunter is the same thing, you know.
Yeah, and now Monster Hunter, it's hardcore. I mean, it's not for the faint of heart.
But you're supposed to seek out help from more experienced players who are usually pretty happy to give you that advice, right?
Exactly. And I mean, something like that with a Nintendo spin on it, like that's why I've always said, I've always wondered why there is no kind of first-person shooter equivalent. And I don't mean, why are they not making a military-based first-person shooter? I mean, why are they not taking that type of game mechanic, which people absolutely love, something like Time Splitters, whatever, and why aren't they not making that and pushing that as an online experience? Because it could be a heck of a lot of fun.
And it's really something that's very arcadey at heart, right? Like, it's fast-paced, the games are short, you play them repetitively, you know, you kind of have a different experience every time, and it's very addictive. It's something that I feel like Nintendo is very capable of making a different kind of game that has that same sort of loop, you know, that would be ripe for online. But we haven't really seen them do it yet. So we need to wrap up the show. We do have one last short email, and James is going to read that one.
Shad from Tennessee writes, "So when I picked up Wind Waker, I also got the Collector's Edition Strategy Guide. The guide came with a free download of the e-guide. Thing is, I don't need the e-guide because I have the real guide. So I figured you guys could just give it away on the show. Just go to primegames.com/Wind Waker and punch in, oh my god, and punch in the following code, XQ9B-AXKM-AF8D-GXK3. Hope whoever gets it makes good use of it."
And redeemed. Thank you.
Perfect.
That's very, very generous of you, and, you know, I hope whoever's listening to this, give it a shot. Maybe you will be the first one to do it.
If you get it, write into the show. And thank me for pronouncing all the letters correctly.
And thanks, Shad, for offering that. So that is going to wrap up this episode. Thank you, everyone who wrote in. And, you know, even if we didn't get to read your question on the show, we always enjoy looking at those. We discuss them amongst ourselves, and they do influence what happens on the podcast. So thank you very much. And please send in your questions and ideas and free giveaway codes to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, or look for the link in the show notes over at the website. Before we go, I wanted to mention a couple things. We always appreciate the ratings and reviews on iTunes. So if you've never done that, it only takes a second. It's a big help. Please go check that out. And thank you, everyone who's done that over the years. And one other thing, there's a big movie release, I'm sure you've heard about it, called Gravity. Movie means a lot to me, clearly, being set in space and being about, you know, fairly realistic things that astronauts do. That is my day job. And I had a lot to say about it, and so did some of the other guys over on the Box Office Poison show. So if you would like to hear my thoughts about the space movie Gravity, like to hear about a lot of other movies, I hope you'll go check that out. That's a really fun show about movies, and you can find that over at crosstalk.com. That is with a W. So that's all. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll be back next week with more Radio Free Nintendo.
Bye.
Bye.
Take it easy, everybody.